It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Kudlow. I'm Larry Kudlow. So we witnessed a total solar eclipse today. It's a great event. And here's the really good news. Actually, it's still unfolding. We are moving from the darkness gradually back into light. Very important. Kind of like what's going to happen in November at the election. Oops. We report. You decide. Now, some more breaking news. There he goes again. Joe Biden canceling student debt. Just a few moments ago, 25 million borrowers, no interest payments, going to cost a fortune, bucks the Supreme Court and breaks the law. Senator Marsha Blackburn's going to be on that and some other matters in just a couple minutes. Congressman Brian Mast and Corey Mills will weigh in on the Ukraine bill in the House. Will Speaker Johnson secure the border or not? And our political panel on Trump's unifying fundraiser, big news. And his new abortion policy announcement today, also big news. And the great Art Laffer on inflation, interest rates, and Biden tax hikes. No good. First up, let's go to our own Edward Lawrence, who is live in Madison, Wisconsin, with solar, lunar, I don't know, whatever. But he's got details on Joe Biden's student loan bailout. Edward, what can you tell us?
Yeah, I could... Larry, I can tell you the president is trying to energize that younger voter by expanding his student loan forgiveness program. He's announced new changes, proposed changes to existing programs that would expand it to include some 30 million people and balloon the cost of this. Now, already the president has put the taxpayers on the hook for $146 billion in canceling student loan debt and affecting 4 million, roughly 4 million people. President Biden telling the crowd he also wants free community college.
I will never stop to deliver student debt relief on hardworking Americans, and it's only in the interest of America that we do it. And again, it's for the good of our economy that's growing stronger and stronger, and it is. By freeing millions of Americans from this crushing debt of student debt, it means they can finally get on with their lives.
But the president of the Committee for Responsible Federal Budget, Mike McGuinness, says President Biden continuing to push this accentuates the problem.
It would actually make the problem worse. It is not a structural fix. The way that we subsidize higher ed now makes the costs go up, and these one-off debt forgiveness would also make that problem of how expensive higher ed is worse, not better.
And she adds that forgiving debt could also put pressure on inflation. Now, the president hoping to expand the program and finalize the rule just in time for people to start voting. The last process took about 5 months, which means the final rule here would come out about September, right before the November election. But this time, they're going to face legal challenges. The attorney general of Kansas has already said that the president cannot get around the Supreme Court this way. Larry?
I am sure, Edward, that it is the timing of this purely coincidental. I'm certain of it.
you know, like most, election year, things come out.
Oh, that's
stuff
right.
Stuff happens.
It's even better than a solar eclipse. That is the great Edward Lawrence out there in Wisconsin. Thank you ever so much. All right, folks, a couple thoughts from me. This is important. Come home to Trump. That was the theme of President Trump's smashing fundraiser Saturday night, pulling in more than 50 million clams. It's a one-event record, eclipsing the Biden-Obama-Clinton 26 million at Radio City Music Hall. What was that, last week or the week before? The Republican donor class coming home to Mr. Trump, unifying after the divisive primary season has come to an end. Right now, Mr. Trump winning virtually all the polls, especially the swing state surveys, and showing that enthusiasm and momentum is on his side. The list of contributors at Wall Streeters John Paulson's home, well, it reads like a who's who of the GOP mega donors: Harold Hamm, Steve Wynn, Robert Mercer, Todd Ricketts, John Katsimatidis, to name but a few. Many of these folks were for DeSantis or Haley during the primary season or other candidates, but they are now unifying around Mr. Trump in order to defeat Joe Biden's woke, open border, and big government socialism. Mr. Trump spoke to them about economic growth with his trademark support for drill, baby, drill, tax cuts and deregulation. He described his working class coalition of blacks, Latinos, whites and young people. He emphasized that wages under his second term would grow faster than prices, thus ending Joe Biden's affordability crisis and reminding how well typical families did during his first term. He also talked about rewarding success, not punishing it. And he mentioned trade reciprocity and, of course, stopping the Biden illegal immigration crime wave. Just as important was his theme of unifying the country around successful policies. At this fundraiser, Mr. Trump emphasized not only unity in the GOP, but unity throughout America. Success is always the best revenge. A prosperous America, secured by law and order along the border and throughout the heartland, as well as restoring respect overseas. President Trump believes that his America First policies will bring America back together. The donors loved it. So will everybody else. And that's my thought for this evening. Now, let us bring in our friend, Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator Blackburn, thank you, ma'am, for your time. I just want to spend a moment on this fundraiser. They raise big bucks, but it's like the GOP is coming together. And I think the reach out here, you know, successful policies to restore the middle class, I think the whole country is going to unify around this.
I agree with you, Larry, and everywhere I go, all across Tennessee and into other states, people talk about inflation. When you look at the fact that food costs are up 36.8% over where they were in 2020, people feel that pinch at the grocery cart, also at the gas pump. They know that under President Donald Trump, they had a little money left over at the end of the month. And under Joe Biden, they have too much month left over at the end of their money. And they want to go back to Trump policies, and I agree with them wholeheartedly.
Senator Blackburn, that's a great line about the money at the end of the month and the month at the end of the money. I love that. I'm going to have to put that to work. Will you unlock that? That's a terrific line, honestly.
You have at it, Larry.
Thank you ever so much. All right, let's just move on now. Here we go again. President Biden, he's expanding the loan cancellation now up maybe 30 million borrowers or more, no interest payments, no principal payments. And it just so happens the registration will come sometime in late summer or early fall, just before the election. I'm sure that's just a coincidence. Supreme Court said no. What about the Supreme Court doesn't Mr. Biden understand, Senator Blackburn? I still don't get it.
It is so offensive to Tennesseans and I think to all Americans when Joe Biden will stand up and start railing against the Supreme Court and say, it doesn't matter what they say. I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, Larry, people look at this and say, we're tired of two tiers of justice, two tiers of access, two tiers of treatment. And they know that Joe Biden, this president, is openly defying the Supreme Court when the Supreme Court has spoken and has said, Mr. President, you cannot do this. And for him to say, I'll do it anyway, is so wrong. It's one of the reasons people are tired of Joe Biden and his antics.
I thought he was the president in defense of democracy and defense of the Constitution. I mean, to me, that's an opening, you know, as wide as a truck. He should be criticized and held accountable. Because decide this, the Supreme Court decision, by the way, he's probably violating, as you've said many times, he's violating the Constitution on the border. He's violating the Constitution with his regulatory state. Now he's got these student loans. He's violating the Constitution with his war, his lawfare war on Trump. I mean, he's violating the Constitution. He wouldn't even allow, remember, Democratic primaries in North Carolina and in Florida. And they did everything they could to keep Robert Kennedy Jr. off the ballot. I mean, it's fascinating to me. This is democracy. He's the anti-democracy.
And what he continues to say is to trot out that line and talk about how he's trying to defend democracy. But isn't that what the Democrats often do? They'll say one thing and do the exact opposite. And what Joe Biden is trying to do, what his administration is trying to do, is to be a government of, by, and for the powerful, the elite, the well-connected, and not a government of, by, and for the people. The court has told him no on student loans. He has also been defied when it comes to the border. And we will begin this impeachment on Wednesday with Mayorkas. He should be impeached. And if Chuck Schumer tries to toss out these articles and not have a trial, every American should be incensed. This would never have happened in a Trump administration. It would never have happened if Republicans were in charge of the Senate. And for Chuck Schumer to say, we're not going to have a trial, that has never happened in the history of the United States.
Can you just walk us through that? That's a key point, Senator. The House passed the impeachment, and they walk it over. They walk it over this week to the Senate, and the Senate is supposed to just accept it. It's a, as I understand it, it's a pro forma development under the Constitution. You're saying that will be rejected for the first time?
Well, we will convene at 5 on Wednesday, and we will receive the documents from the House, the impeachment articles, and then we will be sworn in as a court of impeachment. Every senator is sworn in. The process then would be for the evidence to be presented, for the trial to take place. What Chuck Schumer is saying he's going to do is move to table the impeachment articles and not move forward on a trial. That has never happened. It has never happened. And what we need to do is move forward with that trial. I think Mayorkas should be removed from office. He has been doing Joe Biden's bidding on the border. That border policy is wide open. It is an intentional move by the Democrats. There are thousands of Americans that have died of fentanyl poisoning. There are thousands of Americans who have been killed in traffic accidents or shootings, things that have been carried out by those illegally in this country. There are thousands of women and girls who have been sex trafficked by the cartels. There are 85,000 children that HHS and the Office of Refugee Resettlement took into custody, and we do not know where they are, and Mayorkas cannot tell you where they are or who has them. They have lost 85,000 children. Some of these children were being trafficked, and now they've gone to sponsors that were not vetted. Yes, Mayorkas should be tried, and he should be removed from office.
Yes, ma'am. Not to speak of a bunch of New York cops being attacked in the subway by Venezuelan gang members, and also tragic.
The list goes on and on.
Right. Tragic, this cop in the Queens who was taken out by another Venezuelan
devastating
criminal. Anyway, Senator Marsha Blackburn, thank you, ma'am. I want to get this right. Money left over at the end of the month versus the month left over and no money. Is that right? Is that about right?
Well, there's too much month left over at the end of the money. And under Trump, they had money left over at the end of the month.
All right. I'm taking that down verbatim. We will give you credit, ma'am, as always. Senator Marsha Blackburn, thank you ever so much. All right, folks, coming up here on Kudlow, there's a Ukraine foreign aid bill coming. The question is, will Speaker Johnson insist on securing the border in that bill? We'll ask Florida Congressman Corey Mills and Brian Mast. And remember, folks, you can catch Kudlow Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. right here on Fox Business. If for some reason you can't make it at 4, please just text your favorite 9-year-old and she will show you how to DVR the show, and you will never miss an impeachment. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
All right, it's been 6 months since the Israeli massacre by Hamas. Now, where do things stand? Fox News' Jackie Heinrich live at the White House with more. Jackie, what can you tell us?
Well, Larry, since that Israeli strike that killed seven aid workers, pressure on the president from his base has really been boiling over. You had outside of Detroit last week, protesters chanting death to America. And then in Wilmington over the weekend, you had protesters getting as close as they could to the president's house, acting out, even pouring fake blood from water bottles in a display there. They've been calling on Biden to condition future aid to Israel, something the White House has hinted that it's considering. And it's also something Republicans have been warning would be a dangerous message to U.S. allies and enemies alike. But it does not sound like Israel is poised to dial back its plans in Rafah.
I think we will wait a few more days. If there will be no deal about the hostages, we will step into the city. You know, we waited for a very long period of time to negotiate with Hamas. If they are playing with us and with the U.S., with the Qataris, with the Egyptians, they will find out that we know how to fight, and we will find them even in Rafah.
That means that Biden will be tested again. Today, the White House cast doubt on that timeline, though, saying Israel's given assurances they won't begin operations before a broader discussion about viable options and alternatives.
We don't think that Israel can effectively evacuate 1.4 million people, that a full-scale invasion into Rafah would have an enormously harmful effect or impact on the civilians who are there, that it would hinder the delivery of humanitarian assistance, that it would actually hurt Israel's national security. And that's something, it's the kind of operation that we can't support. And that's what we remain in conversation with them about.
Meantime, in the background, the administration seems to be more urgently working on this hostage situation. You had the CIA director, Bill Burns, in Cairo over the weekend trying to work on these negotiations. Tonight at the White House, you have families of U.S. citizens being held hostage, meeting with Jake Sullivan. And we're told, officials say, that there's been a proposal given to Hamas. We're now just waiting for Hamas to respond, Larry.
All right, Jackie Heinrich, we appreciate the rundown very, very much. All right, question is now, is Joe Biden betraying Israel? And are the Joe Biden Democrats playing into Hamas's hands? Let's ask Florida Congressman Corey Mills and Brian Mast. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on. Brian, I begin with you. A lot of people, including this reporter, this host, believe that Mr. Biden's playing into Hamas's hands and he is betraying Israel. What do you think?
I think that's the truth. And he's been doing it from the beginning, saying one thing to maybe people in Detroit, Michigan, that are of, you know, an Arab background, and then saying an entirely different thing to another group that he'd stand in front of in the same day. And then just today, maybe you saw it, Nancy Pelosi and about 30, 40 other Democrats sent a letter to the administration saying no more arms transfers to Israel. And to break that down for one quick second, What that literally means is no more Iron Dome transfers. So the measurable humanitarian effort that the United States of America puts forward, knocking indiscriminate rockets out of the sky coming from Gaza into Israel, Democrats don't want to see us transfer those rockets.
I mean, Corey, Biden's gotten cold feet within a few weeks of the massacre on October 7th. And a lot of people are just furious. Now, he may be playing for Dearborn, Michigan, or he may be playing a little bit for something outside of Minneapolis, St. Paul. But Israel, this is an existential threat, truly. And they're the only democracy in the Middle East. And they were a great American ally. What has happened to Joe Biden, or is another Afghanistan on the way?
Well, Afghanistan was just the beginning, as you know, Larry, with the way that he handled the botched Afghan withdrawal that resulted in 13 brave heroes that we should never forget's name. But we have to understand that Biden has started to pander to the radical left more and more, the Rashida Tlaib, the Cori Bush, the Ilhan Omars, the AOCs, the ones that are the pro-Hamas sympathizers who won't actually stand with our longest standing ally in the Middle East, which is Israel. This is why President Trump was so wise in his foreign policy decisions to put things in place like the Abraham Accords, to normalize relationships and to try and weaken Iran's approach. Look, a win or a victory for Hamas, a win or a victory for the Houthi rebels, who it was this administration, Biden, who chose to delist as an actual terrorist organization, is a win for Iran. A win for Iran is a win for China, Russia, and North Korea, who they're geopolitically aligned with. So we have to look at this not from a singular foreign policy focus, from a geopolitical alignment to what this means moving forward for America on the world stage.
Thank you for all that, Jim. Brian, come back to you, if you will, Brian Mast. Speaker Johnson has a dilemma, tough bill now. Ukraine and other foreign aid funding, there's some money in there for Israel, there's some money in there for Taiwan, but I think it's $60 billion mostly for Ukraine. But then the question is, do you need to tie that to the border, which you may have heard Senator Marshall Blackburn. I mean, the catastrophe at the border and its lack of law and order throughout the country is getting worse, not better. And Biden has been duplicitous about that. What happens here, Brian Mast? How do you personally see this?
Look, I think it makes it more palatable for some in the House if you tie border to Ukraine or Israel or Taiwan or something else. But the fact of the matter is we are a Congress that came in and we made a commitment to the American people that there'll be germaneness to each thing that we vote on, one thing related to the other. And so I think it would be wholly responsible for the Speaker to say, you know, he can move a vote on Israel aid, he can move a vote on Ukraine aid, he can move a vote on Taiwan aid or something else or border or you name it. But would you buckle all of those together? That's a promise broken to the rank and file members of the House, like myself, like my colleague, Mr. Mills, that is not what we signed up for. We want to vote on things individually, because just because it might be global affairs and foreign affairs doesn't mean everything's exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, omnibus is bad and minibus is bad. And that's kind of what this is. I agree with you. I think that's an important point. Corey, one other thing that's floating around from Lindsey Graham and also Donald Trump is the aid to Ukraine in the form of a $60 billion loan. You know, if they succeed, they'll pay it back. If they don't succeed, it'll be gone. What do you make of the loan idea?
Well, I don't like the Lend-Lease program they had established before, but if you actually look at the details, Senator Lindsey Graham also stated that he wants language on the loan that says that it can be withdrawn or deferred, meaning that he's basically going ahead and utilizing the premise of it being a loan with the intent of making it free money. At $35 trillion in deficit, we're going to spend next year more in servicing our interest than we'll spend for the entire annual budget of our national defense. We have hundreds of thousands who have died under Joe Biden with open borders. We've got 178-plus countries and over 400-plus people on known terrorist watch lists coming into the U.S. from the north and south. You've got all the things that Marshall Blackburn was just talking about with regards to angel families who are adding up, just like with Lincoln Riley. So I think that we need to start thinking about our own borders, our own security, our own sovereignty, and our own economic prosperity before we start throwing out free money to areas of the country where you have, for example, the EU, who has $190 billion in frozen Russian assets. They profited 3.5 $1.5 billion on that they can utilize. This is actually an area that can be used. And if it's not an offset, if it's not a pay for, like we put forth on the Israel aid package to offset with 87,000 IRS agents or Green New Deal spending that we can offset for a pay for, or even the unused COVID funding, that's where we need to be at. Focus on America, focus on American prosperity, not foreign, you know, governments who want to secure their own people for corrupt practices.
Brian, I mean, these are all great points. Brian Mass, I'm going to give you the last word on this. You know, I agree with you about the need for segmentation, compartments. I don't like these omnibus or minibus bills at all. But if you're going to use, if you're going to help a Ukraine, wouldn't it be better with suggestions like an inspector general, for example, to oversee the funds, or and or some language that would mandate some kind of off-ramp peace negotiations? This thing could go on forever as a stalemate. I don't know whether you agree with that or not, but I'm just going to ask you in the last moments here, does any of that make sense to you?
Well, we're almost at day 800, and there have been independent audits of what's going on there. But I think you pointed out one of the biggest problems. Nobody on the face of this earth can tell you whether it has to be the end of this war being war crime tribunals for Vladimir Putin, or all Russians are out of the Ukraine or Crimea, or there's nuclear demilitarization because of what they've done, or demilitarized NATO borders or whatever. You can't find the national security strategic objective that is being sought since day one or day 200 or 600 or 800 that we're almost on. And that's one of the biggest problems we face. We lost objectives.
Got it. You put it much better than I did. Thank you. Gentlemen, terrific stuff. Corey Mills and Brian Mast, two GOP congressional stars. Thanks to both of you. All right, folks, coming up next, Trump's unifying fundraiser. That is very big news over the weekend. And also today, the former president announced a new abortion policy. That's important as well. We'll talk about it with Liz Peek, with Alec Lace, and with Guy Benson. I'm Kudlow. Be right back. All right, let's talk some politics. Trump had a smashing, unifying fundraiser this weekend down in Florida. Let's talk about that. Joining us, Liz Peek, syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor. Alec Lace, host of First Class Fatherhood, his podcast. His son is here in studio wearing exactly the same tie. And political editor at townhall.com, Fox News contributor and host of the Guy Benson Show on Fox News Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Liz, start with you. Money. And I want to add money plus unity is what it looks like to me down there in Florida.
Yeah, and that honestly is this point was more important, I think, than the actual dollars raised, though the dollars raised was stunning. I mean, let's just admit it was, as Donald Trump said on Truth Social, biggest fundraiser ever in the history of man or whatever. But it was great. And it did definitely start to narrow the gap between Democrat fundraising and Republicans because they have been way behind. The GOP had a bad year last year. They really need money. But to your point, Larry, I thought it was very important that this crowd of longtime donors actually did rally behind Donald Trump after a lot of them said never again.
Right, never again. Yeah. Alec, they did close ranks, which is important. And Trump had a good message. He talked about, again, I'm going to paraphrase, but success is the best revenge. And the success idea, which he used in South Carolina, I don't recall if he used it any other primary nights, was awfully good message. Use it again down there in Florida. I hope you use it some more. What you think?
Yeah, well, I thought that Biden had the bigger guests, right? Lizzo showed up there. So I think Trump got the bigger donations.
Oh, you know, Trump Obama. He had Obama and Clinton.
Yeah.
And he still outbeat him two to one.
Three presidents against one, and Trump out-donated, got more donations.
Of course. Yeah,
the message is on point. We got to save the country, and we need the big donors to show up and step up. You know that Biden attacks him, saying he doesn't have the grassroots movement. But this is a grassroots movement like we've never seen before in this country, starting in 2016. So the people are on board, the big donors. Donors are on board, and we're going to change the country in November.
You know, Guy, just as Alec was talking, I was just thinking, it's like one chicken beats three turkeys. How's that? I just thought of that.
Did you just make that up?
I just made that. I swear, Alec always brings me to my finest moments. I mean, all three of those guys, that's the best they could do is 26 mil. And on one little island, Trump raises 50.
The Democrats still have a big advantage in this area because they are the big money in politics party.
Yes, they are.
But this is a big step in the right direction for the Republicans. I'm going to come to something that I've been talking about a lot. Marquette had a poll out, national poll out last week that showed among the likeliest voters, Joe Biden's up by 4 points head to head. Among registered voters who are sort of unreliable but are registered, Trump's up by 12. And among unregistered voters who are eligible, unregistered adults, Trump's up by 25.
Yeah.
So a key question about $50+ million in one night, how's it going to be spent? And I'll just beat the drums. If the Republicans want to be a professional party interested in winning, a lot of that money needs to go toward the low propensity voters getting ballots in their hands, however it's legal, wherever it might be, and then registering the people who aren't yet registered. Because the Democrats, one of their analysts, put out a panic memo a few months ago saying, we are worried about voter registration drives, registering the wrong people, i.e. Trump voters. That's a cue for the Republicans if they can take it.
Well, I think you're right, and I hope they listen to you. Very important. They want the whole federal bureaucracy to be out there as vote mail-in ballot harvesters.
Right.
So you're exactly right.
That's a serious thing. I mean, they literally are weaponizing every federal agency, as Claudia Tenney said on your show.
Yeah.
This is not a joke. It's 3 million federal employees, and wouldn't it be hilarious if they go out and register? They say it could result in 3 million new voters, 3.5 million new voters. Wouldn't it be hilarious that they elected Trump?
Plus, we were talking about these, you know, the 50,000, I call them climateers, the climate corps. I love the $8 billion for 50,000 for the climate corps. I just see 50,000 vote harvesters. That's all I see. Let us move on. I know, Alec, you're dying to get in on that, and I don't have enough time. Here's Mr. Trump dramatically today on Truth Social unveiling his position on abortion. Take a listen, please.
The Republican Party will always support the creation of strong, thriving, and healthy American families. That includes supporting the availability of fertility treatments like IVF in every state in America. Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both. And whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Many states will be different.
All right. Very interesting. Liz, I want to give you a whack at it first. What'd you think?
I think that's exactly the right message. And eventually this will not be an issue any longer because every state will decide their own path on this. But look, Trump is in the middle ground. That's where America is. Democrats are the extremists on abortion.
You're shaking your head. I mean, I happen to think Liz is dead on right on this. He is the middle ground.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Look, the Supreme said state by state, but, and it's an important but, he's going back to the, he calls it properly, the Reagan-esque exclusions, which Republicans used to say and then forgot to say in 2022 and sometimes in 2020. Guy, what do you think?
I think the pro-life movement, large elements of it, will be disappointed with this position. Mm. And I'm actually wondering if, let's say, a 20-week ban somehow landed on his desk. Are you going to veto that, really? I'm not convinced of that. He'll have to answer that question probably. But it's like he's watched all of the attacks the Democrats have been launching on this issue for the last couple of years. And that statement was a direct response to all of it. His position is a constitutional one, and it is a moderate one, very much compared to the position of Joe Biden and the Democrats. They've gone off the deep end, tragically, ghoulishly on this issue, and Republicans need to make that case. Trump did some of that this morning.
Well, Alec, ghoulishly includes partial birth.
Oh, no.
Ghoulishly includes literally killing the baby after the baby has been born. I mean, I don't know if that's what Guy's referring to, but that's true, and that's ghoulish. Hillary Clinton was in favor of that, and Joe Biden talks about Roe v. Wade. They're going way beyond Roe v. Wade.
There's a reason, Larry, why when you watch all these, you know, doctor shows that they have on TV, that they never show you what happened. happens during an abortion. They keep that off the screen all the time because they don't want people to see how barbaric it truly is. But what Donald Trump just did here was cut off all the Democrats' talking points at the knees. This is their number one issue. This is their go-to thing. We talk about the border, inflation, the economy. Their only thing that they're going after him right now heavily is on this abortion issue. And the Supreme Court said it goes to the states. He plays it safe here. It goes back to the states where it belongs. Not a constitutional right to have an abortion. Biden was told that you can't have a constitutional right to pay off these student loans. He denies that, and he's still trying to do it.
And Biden's breaking the law. Trump, on the other hand, and I like this, is abiding by the law.
Right.
The Supreme's made a decision, put it back to the states, and Trump is saying that's right.
Ooh.
Biden, on the other hand, the Supreme said no to student loans, no to the EPA bureaucrats, and Biden's the lawbreaker. I thought he was the pro-democracy guy, Alec.
He's not. And you know what? People aren't voting for Joe Biden. They're voting against Donald Trump. That's the truth. He doesn't have supporters. He has people that hate. That's why they have to keep feeding this Trump derangement syndrome. You'll never see a cure for Trump derangement syndrome because they're never going to try to stop it. Those are the people that are voting for Biden, not his supporters.
Yes, it's a virus, but you can't treat it. You're exactly
maybe Fauci
right.
will find a cure someday.
Liz, I know it's a bit of a cliche. Do suburban moms who hear this announcement today take a breath, a sigh of relief?
I just don't think, I think the issue begins to lose its potency. I am worried that in two important swing states, Nevada and Arizona, they will have abortion on the ballot because let's face it, not all states yet have gotten to the place where this is no longer an issue. They haven't declared their own law. So in those two states, it will drive turnout to some degree. The counteracting trend is that young people are very concerned about Israel and Palestine.
Yeah.
So that is something.
I am furious. I mean, I think just on that point, Biden has betrayed Israel.
Yeah.
He has betrayed. It's not a subject. Go ahead. Biden has betrayed Israel. Guy
well,
Benson, you're a smart fellow. Take a whack at it.
Over the weekend.
That's my view. Disagree if you want.
Over the weekend in Dearborn, Michigan, there were
yes.
rallies and chants
yes.
of not just death to Israel, but death to America.
I know.
And those are some of the voters, core Democrat constituencies, that this campaign and this administration are pandering to.
And it's
astonishing.
And it's pathetic.
Well,
and
it's worse. It's worse than pathetic.
And we've forgotten about the massacre of October 7th. And Joe
we
Biden's word isn't worth anything.
Do
I'm
you know,
sorry.
We have.
No, I don't mean you, this town. I mean the administration.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so annoying.
In
Go ahead.
District south of Dearborn, Biden got 88% of the vote in 2020, Arab American district. This time round in the primary, 4%. This is big. I think this is going to really haunt the Democrats. It's going to show up at the convention in Chicago.
Good. Let it.
Yeah.
Good.
No kidding.
All right. Liz Peek, Alec Glaze, and Guy Benson, thanks very much. We appreciate it. Next up, folks, we're going to talk to Art Laffer. I think he has a thought about inflation, and I think he has a thought about tax cuts versus tax increases. I could be wrong, but I seldom am. I'm Kudlow. Be right back. Shocking disclosure, Joe Biden wants to raise taxes big time, according to his campaign plans. Joining us now, Art Laffer, former Reagan economist, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient, and author of Taxes Have Consequences. Arthur, we had the Tax Foundation on, Scott Hodge. Speaking of consequences, Biden's plan basically taxes everything and everybody. And Scott said it'll lose about 800,000 jobs, 2% GDP, 2% loss in real wages. I think it actually would be worse than that. But the point is this. Biden wants to tax and discourage success and opportunity. That's really his message.
It's totally his message. He just wants to get everything under the government umbrella. That's exactly what he wants to do. And the only thing that keeps him from doing that are private sector jobs and incomes. And, you know, when you look at the facts, Larry, I mean, the facts are really very explicit. Whenever you raise taxes on the rich, the economy underperforms, tax revenues from the rich go down, and the poor are hammered. Mm-hmm. Whenever you lower taxes on the rich, the economy outperforms, tax revenues from the rich go up, and the poor, the minorities, the disenfranchised do well. That's exactly what you find from 110 years of U.S. data where we look at every single tax return. I just don't understand how he can sell this message when people understand clearly it just doesn't work.
Sure. If the top earners and the most successful, if you penalize them, you're penalizing the middle and the lower earners. And you know, Art, we saw this.
Of course.
This was Kevin Hassett's argument and your argument on the corporate tax. Now, Biden's going to raise the corporate tax if he had a chance, which he won't. But nonetheless, he wants to raise it from 21 to 28%. The people who will be hurt the most are the middle income wage earners and the lower income wage earners. In fact, the lower income wage earners had the biggest percentage gain in income after the Trump corporate tax. The bottom 20% actually did the best. Biden would screw them.
Yeah, Kevin Hassett's work on this is really brilliant. If you look at real wages and workers' wages and what happens to median income, I mean, he shows that the corporate tax rate really had enormous impact on that. I think Steve Moore's number is that, I mean, the increases in median income under Trump were something like $5,000 or more than that,
$6,000.
And it's down 4,000 for Biden. Mm-hmm. And if you raise the corporate tax rate, it'll reverse those policies. And who wants that? And how does it sell politically, Larry? Tell me, I mean, what political consultant or advisor would suggest that this is the policies you want to announce in order to win an election? It just doesn't work that way.
Art, this week, I guess Wednesday, Thursday, we have CPI, PPI. In your judgment, is inflation dead, quiescent, still alive? How do you see the story, and should the Fed be cutting interest rates?
Well, let me just say that, you know, looking at these inflation numbers in the near term, let's say in 3-4 month periods, that type of thing, I think using monetary aggregates and things like that doesn't make sense. Yeah. But using other market prices does make sense. When you look at cryptocurrencies, they're, what are they, 71,000 is the Bitcoin, 71,500. It's hugely up, Larry. Look at the price of gold, 23,050 bucks, something like that. It's hugely up. If you look at some of these minor currencies in the global thing. I think in Egypt and some of these other currencies, you're seeing cracks in those currencies and really massive devaluations there. You know, when I look at these markets and when I look at what's going on with oil and some of these other things, I am hard pressed to understand how those inflation numbers literally will be coming down. Mm. It makes no sense to me that those numbers, actual measured, will actually be coming down. So I'm not expecting to see inflation cooling off in this coming period at all, the next 3 or 4 months. And with that being the case, how can the Fed justify, using their model and their way of thinking, cutting interest rates? I mean, how can they possibly justify that?
I mean, even if they use the discredited Phillips curve and target unemployment is under 4, or if they're smarter and use a commodity price rule, which is what you're suggesting. I mean, commodity prices have gone up about 20%, I think, since early to mid-December.
Huge.
That's a big move. Part of it's energy, to be sure, but a lot of it, I mean, copper is up too. I mean, so if they use either one, Art, commodity price rule or the old Phillips curve unemployment rate, it basically says don't tamper with your interest rates.
Exactly. And, you know, even interest rates are edging up as well if you look at these numbers. Yeah. And all of these prices, Larry, tell us, at least for the near term, prices are a far better forecaster for inflation than these quantity measures, which are sort of fuzzy in anything other than long periods. Far better measures. I just don't see how they could rationalize a cutting of the discount rate or the Fed interest rate. They just can't. And the numbers that are dropping off, if you look at the CPI, there's a number 12 months ago that's dropping off and a number that's coming on. If you look at those numbers, again, there's no good news for the Fed or for inflation on those numbers either.
Thank you, Arthur. We appreciate it. Folks, I'll be back with my last word. So the unity theme worked very well for Mr. Trump at that tremendous, smashing fundraiser. And I think the unity theme works very well for all Americans. Here's a message. Don't punish success.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.